Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with a full UFC 305 recap. I'm very excited to be going over all of the fun fights that went down this past weekend. It was an absolutely amazing time of fights, and we'll be diving into that on today's episode. As well, looking at new UFC fights, we posed a new verdict Q&A question I recently drafted for my 16-man fantasy team. Absolutely crazy. Going to talk about that as well as new stuff along the way. A lot of surprises on this episode. It has been pretty hectic moving into my new place for my senior year of college. I've been learning that not every single human being is the same. And, you know, we all view living and taking care of our house in a different way. So that's been a challenge. That's been something. But I love challenges. I love doing stuff like that. And it's a great learning experience that you're going to work with people, live with people that you don't always agree with. So that's been something. So I've been doing a ton of cleaning, having to buy things. And honestly, I've been here 4 days and I finally bought groceries. Like, I just barely been eating. It has been absolutely hectic, but a lot of fun. A lot of fun along the way. Good to see some of my friends I haven't seen in a while. And we have tons of stuff to cover on today's episode. So hopefully I don't drag on too much with all the topics, because I do want to talk about UFC 305. Because we correctly predicted that DDP would beat Adesanya. So without ado, let's dive on into it. First off, new UFC fights. Okay, our favorite thing to do is new UFC fights. And we recently got some huge announcements from none other than the big man, Dana White. I'm only going to talk about some of the bigger ones. And that's for UFC 307 going down in Salt Lake City. One of the fights announced for that card. Number 10-ranked middleweight Roman Dolidze will be taking on the number 15th-ranked welterweight Kevin Holland. Absolutely amazing fight. Kevin Holland steps in. I think Roman Dolidze is stepping in to replace Chris Curtis. Yeah, Chris Curtis was supposed to take on Kevin Holland, but hey, you know what? Roman taking another short-notice fight. He just took a short-notice fight with Anthony Smith and beat him, nonetheless, UFC 303, so fun stuff there. Kevin, I absolutely love him. He's 25-11 professionally, 12-8 in the UFC. I mean, wins over Jacare Souza, Michael Chiesa, Jeff Neal. Most recently submitted Michael Okejcek in about 90 seconds. Yeah, he's pretty incredible. Roman beat Jack Hermanson, beat Anthony Smith. I mean, I'm more excited to see Kevin Holland. Another fight announced for that welterweight matchup. Number 9 ranked welterweight. I keep saying middleweight for some reason. Welterweight, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson is back. He takes on the number 11th ranked Joaquin Buckley. Joaquin slowly climbing the ranks, wins over Vicente Luque and Nursultan Nurmagomedov, have him positioned now in the top 15, and now he gets the top 10 guy in Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And I just find it crazy that Wonderboy has finishing wins over Robert Whittaker and Jorge Masvidal. I find that absolutely crazy if you ask me. Should be an exciting striking affair. Hopefully Buckley doesn't turn to grappling, as we all know that is Wonderboy's biggest weakness. He wins fights when it's on the feet. He loses fights when it's on the ground. Courtesy, if we look at his last fight, of Shavkat Rakhmonov in December. And the big one that we've all been waiting for, of course, Hakwael Pennington versus Julia Pena for the Women's Bantamweight Championship. I'm obviously being satire. I'm obviously being sarcastic. We already knew that was happening, but the actual main event, he steps in to save another event. UFC 307 main event, Alex Pereira is back for his third title defense of this year as he takes on the number 8 ranked Khalil Roundtree Jr. It's absolutely crazy how this fight came together. Just short notice, they needed a star for this. Alex Pereira said, you know what, I'll step in again. I'll do it. He's already knocked out Jamal Hill. He's already knocked out Jerry Prochazka. He's coming to knock out Khalil Roundtree Jr. And Khalil Roundtree, 13-5 professionally, wins over Paul Craig, Anthony Smith, and Dustin Jacoby, probably his biggest wins. I mean, his win over Anthony Smith was violent. It was absolutely violent of a win. And he somehow wound up getting a title shot. So good for him. Excited to see that. But nonetheless, Alex Pereira, we're probably picking to knock him out in round one or two. And the final, I don't really want to say big fight, but you know, when you're in the top 15, I guess any fight that you are officially announced for is kind of big. Dustin Jacoby in the men's light heavyweight division will be taking on Vitor Petrino. Vitor Petrino 11-1, Dustin Jacoby 19-9. Veterans, both in their own respect. Vitor, somewhat newer, recently lost his first professional bout to Anthony Smith. I mean, Anthony Smith, his name just keeps being just is thrown around so much, I feel, in this episode to kick off. And as for Dustin Jacoby, I mean, he's beaten Kenny and Chukwani. I mean, I don't know, Dustin Jacoby. He's just one of those guys where he's always bouncing in and out of the top 15. So Vitor Petrino, if you pick up a win here, this would really position you in a very good spot career-wise. So those are your new fun fights that have been officially announced. But on some other side of things about returns and stuff, Brandon Moreno recently said in an interview that he wants to return at UFC 309 at Madison Square Garden for potential Kaikar France rematch or fight with Amir Albazi. I'm here for that. Brandon Moreno, I want to see you back. I'd be very curious if he actually does return. You know, he kind of said he was taking a break after he lost to Brandon Rival, and he's just assessing his career. Another fighter looking to return, top five middleweight, I actually be in the top 10 now. Marvin Vettori said he's hoping to return before the end of the year. He's been nursing a shoulder injury and said he should be good to go in under 2 months. So exciting stuff there. I'm always happy to see all these guys returning. And Charles LeBronx finally said that he believes that he will be getting a fight in October or November. Feed me Charles Oliveira into my lungs. He's one of my favorite fighters on the planet. So those are your new UFC fights and new UFC news. Another new segment that we've been introducing is on Verdict, the MMA app, where all MMA fans come and they can create predictions. They have a fight forum where you can pose discussions. And I've been posing discussions weekly to get people to, you know, give me something to talk about on a podcast, to be straight up. And most recently, I proposed the question, who should Chandler fight next? Of course, Michael Chandler. It's looking like him and Connor is never going to happen. It's just looking like it's never going to happen. So I decided to, hey, I'll ask the people, who should Michael Chandler fight so he doesn't spend even more of his prime years of his career waiting for a fight with Conor McGregor, which will never, ever come. So here's what the people said. We got a lot of answers. Oliveira Sub said Dariush. And the thing with Benil Dariush is that there's just no hype with him and Michael Chandler. And they're both veterans in their own respect. And I feel like Benil Dariush is going to be taking on a bottom 15 guy to climb up the rankings. And Benil, for as good as he once was, he's been knocked out round one his last two fights. I just don't see a Michael Chandler fight as that appealing. Alexa said, if Gaethje ain't ready, then Rafael Fiziev. I love both of those fights. Justin Gaethje is also in need of a win. But him and Neil Dariush are friends. I don't know if a lot of people know that, so they won't actually fight. I'm assuming they're not like best friends, but they're cordial. And Rafael Fiziev, will see where he ends up. I really like Rafael Fiziev versus Michael Chandler. That could be just a war, judging by both of their fights with Justin Gaethje. I'm happy for both of that. But Neil Dariush, oh wait, this is about Michael Chandler. I'm so silly. They're not going to run back Michael Chandler and Justin Gaethje. They're going to find a new opponent. I got caught up on Dariush. CCMan50 said Dariush if 155, Usman if 170. I don't know necessarily about a Kamaru Usman fight versus Michael Chandler. I'd be very interested to see how Chandler's size fares at welterweight. But hey, you know, Kamaru Usman also in need of a win. That could be a potential option. So I'm here for it. Yeah, I've been personally, I've said in the forum personally, I think he scorches Benil Dariush. That's just how I feel. You know, Michael Chandler, he's still got power. Dariush's chin is not what it used to be. Easy Pick said him against Fiziev would be crazy. I agree. Sugar Sean said Gaethje. CCMan50 responded, Gaethje will be out till probably February next year by my guesswork, but Chandler wants to return in December. I'll be very curious to see. LC Cody 789 said he deserves a big name since he did the UFC a favor by waiting on McGregor. He should fight Colby Covington or MVP. Ooh, Michael Venom Page. I like both those fights. Colby Covington won. Bad blood. Colby Covington sells pay-per-views. But as for MVP, he has so much size at welterweight. I really hope Michael Chandler does not try and go up and fight MVP. Him versus Colby Covington, though, I would absolutely love. 3-Piece Minnesota said he did the UFC a favor by waiting for Connor. He wasn't allowed to remain active. I don't know what he was referring to. CCMan50 said MVP fight would suck. He would just use his reach to outstrike his way to a unanimous decision. LC Cody responds, if Ian Gary can take MVP down, then Chandler can ragdoll him. I love that take. Was it very cordial? No, they were saying a lot more words I'm not going to share on here, but I mean, I completely agree. I would like any of these fights, if I'm being honest. I will not complain. But when we're being realistic, MVP is probably not going to happen. Main event, Mike said, Chandler's coming off a loss, so Gaethje versus Chandler too. I don't really want to see more rematches, but that could be a fun rematch. Punch Drunk Casual said, literally anyone so we can start forgetting Conor's existence again. I agree. Conor McGregor's failed returns now have taken up 2 years, and it has gotten to a point where you see his antics outside the ring. Money has ruined McGregor. Yeah, his kids will never have to work a day in their life, but Conor McGregor's just let money ruin him. He's always out cheating on his wife, doing drugs, drinking, getting in fights. I mean, he's the definition of what happens when you get fame and you just don't really, you're not, I don't really want to say deserve it because you put in the work, but it's gotten to him, you know. He's not a real fighter anymore. And you know, I'll say it, I think a lot of people agree that Conor McGregor is not the same guy he was 10 years ago. 3P's in a soda said Chelsea Chandler, if no one knows about that. Chelsea Chandler was fighting last week and Michael Chandler was rooting for her because they both had the last name Chandler and she lost. And Michael Chandler said, Chelsea, what are you doing? Chandlers don't lose. And that was pretty funny. Draymond Green MMA said Colby Covington fight, of course. And TC Man 50 said, no disrespect, I don't see that fight really meaning anything for the division. Usman would make more sense because they are both needing a big win and they have very similar styles of fighting. Colby just got his big payday from Leon. Now Colby and Usman can draw a lot of fans for a hella good fight with rankings on the line. Draymond responds, I hear you, but Colby has a history of only fighting tough guys in title fights, whether that's the UFC or his choice, I don't know. Don't think he'd fight Usman again for no belt. Chandler's a fun fight that he would probably think he can win. If he won, may even get Conor to entertain fighting him as he beat the guy Conor was going to fight. I like that. Colby Covington versus Michael Chandler, winner fights McGregor, if he ever returns. I would love that. Conor McGregor, I feel like he's in a spot, same with Colby Covington, Michael Chandler, where they're only going to pick fun fan fights. Like, rankings don't apply to those guys, okay? They're either going to never fight again, or they're going to fight someone where rankings don't apply to them. And when it comes to Michael Chandler, who do I think Michael Chandler should fight? You know, in the rankings-wise, he's sitting at 6. Mikey and Dan Hooker just won, but I'm going to be honest, I don't really know. It's almost reached a point where I don't know if he's ever going to return. How about Paddy Pimblett? Paddy Pimblett versus Michael Chandler is what I want because I just don't. I think it's all gimmick fights. I think he's only going to do gimmick fights from now on. But I'm hoping. I'm very hopeful that we will see Michael Chandler return soon in the future. Fun stuff has been going on recently in my life, some of which was a fantasy football draft. And most recently, I did a 16-man fantasy draft, and it was absolutely hectic. So I figured I would run you through my team, where I drafted them, try and explain my logic, because really there isn't any logic in a 16-man fantasy draft. So kicking us off for my league in round number one, I had the 10th pick, and the man who fell to me was Saquon Barkley. And I'm hoping, you know, Saquon, he's got a much better offensive line, much better team in Philadelphia than he did in New York. And he was projected to be in the top 10. I had to snag him. Some of the guys around him, you know, Jonathan Taylor, Garrett Wilson, Isaiah Pacheco, Jameer Gibbs, Puka Nacua, Derrick Henry, those are the other guys that went in round one. I just didn't feel that I could go for them. You know, I felt like I had to settle with Saquon. And honestly, I'm very hopeful that he will do great this year, the great things this upcoming year. Heading into round number two, I elected to go with Rashad White. Rashad White finishes the number 4 running back last season. I don't see him regressing with the current state of the Buccaneers. If anything, he should excel another year with this team. And plus, running 2 starting running backs on a 16-man league was just a strategy I was hoping to go for. Round 3, we reached. We took Jalen Hurts. I couldn't help it. You know, there's no reason he should not be a top 3 quarterback this whole year. Running Saquon and Jalen Hurts. I mean, whenever the Eagles are on the one, I'm getting fantasy points. That was kind of my perspective on it. Round 4, I ended up with Jackson Smith and Jigba. Look, everyone was saying this guy's going to be the big thing in Seattle. I decided to listen to what the people were saying. We'll see how it goes, but I might have been a reach, but hey, he's my star wide receiver now, so there's nothing more to do about that. Round 5, Zamir White, so starting running back for the Raiders. That's right, 3 starting running backs on my team. Love it. Round 6, we took Jordan Love just to troll my friend who drafted right after me, who wanted him but had to take Aaron Rodgers. So I'm going to try and trade him if Aaron Rodgers goes out, which would be diabolical because he is A.J. Brown, and I want A.J. Brown. I want to run a full Eagles team. Round 7 came around. I took Brian Thomas Jr. He was one of the only good wide receivers out there. Plus, everyone's saying he's going to be good, all the fantasy experts. Rookie wide receiver for the Jaguars. I'm hoping he's going to be good. I really hope so, but well, who knows with these rookies. It's always up in the air. Round number 8 came around, and I snagged Brock Bowers. That's right. I got Brock Bowers on my team. Supposed to be the big thing, the next big tight end in the league. And plus, there were no real other tight ends to get out there. In our league, we're running a quarterback, a flex, one running back, two wide receivers, two flex, defense kickers. So tight end would go into a flex position, actually. Round number 9, I snagged Xavier Leggett from Carolina. Hey, I'm riding with the rookies this year. Okay, I am riding with the rookies, putting my faith in them. How will it go? I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go with my rookie wide receivers, but it's fun. It's fun to choose people you want to root for. That's one of the things about fantasy. Another tight end I snagged, Cole Kmet. Look, top 10 tight end last year. And if Justin Fields liked him, I think Caleb Williams will like him. I always think guys like him who can go kind of deep but are also dump off options at tight end, quarterbacks love. And in round 11, I snagged the Bills defense. They finished top 10 last year. They might have been, actually, I think they were number 6 defense last year. And I just needed a defense. So that's just who I ended up with. Round number 12, I mean, things were getting kind of bleak. We ended up with Cairo Santos, Bears kicker. I'm thinking the Bears' offense is going to be way better, but at the same time, they might be ending up in the goal, you know, within the 30 to 40, and Cairo Santos is a reliable option. He finished top 10 last year as a kicking fantasy player, so what more reason to pick him this year? Round 13, I ended up with Taysom Hill. Wow, I didn't even remember drafting Taysom Hill. Okay, I guess he's on my team. Wow, interesting. Round 14, I took DeMarcus Robinson, which ended up being the final round, round 14. DeMarcus Robinson, I like DeMarcus. DeMarcus is a cool guy. Always that one guy that will randomly pop off on the Rams. And I'll be interested to see how the Rams do this year. I mean, there's a lot of mystery around this Rams team. I'd say for certain people don't know if Cooper Kupp is still at the same level he used to be because Puka Nacua has completely outshined him. I don't know. I don't know. We will have to see. So, yeah, my starting lineup, that is, for this league, Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Brian Thomas Jr., Rashad White, Zamir White, Bills defense, and Cairo Santos. I kind of like it. And for week 1, I am projected to win. And facing my buddy Ethan, who is a Packers fan, he is sent with Aaron Rodgers, Josh Jacobs, A.J. Brown, Mike Evans, T. Higgins, Xavier Worthy, Dolphins defense, Cameron Dicker. Dude, he's got a pretty solid team, actually. He's got Baker on the bench. That's his backup backup QB. Oh, no. I'm interested to see this league. I'm in a couple more. Still waiting to get the kinks worked out. I need one person to join in each of my leagues. And hopefully they do soon so we can get those fantasy drafts going. Hopefully we can get that going. So, fun times in fantasy football land. And we'll have a lot more fantasy football content coming for you. Once I can get kind of situated, once I can get into a routine, you know, it's difficult moving into a new place. I can't lie. And for anyone that has, I relate to you. I relate. And I feel you. I feel you because it's different. It's all a different experience. I'll tell you what else is a different experience. And that's all the new news in pop culture coming at you from discussing film. And we've gotten some very, very fun stuff. Very fun stuff going at you. So top 10 new things in pop culture. Number 1, this is in terms of video games. My favorite video game franchise, Mafia. Officially announced they have a new game in the works called Mafia, The Old Country. I'm getting a freaking Godfather, freaking Sopranos video game. I'm absolutely pumped for it. More details to be revealed in December. But Mafia, The Old Country, I love it. I absolutely love it. I don't know if it's a rebrand because they had Mafia 1, 2, and 3. And now it's just Mafia, The Old Country. I think it's just from The Old Country. All I can assume is that takes place probably earlier on. But I love it. I'm here for it. And it's just something exciting about the Mafia games. I love the mob stuff. That's up my alley. I'm here for it. I absolutely love it. What else? They always announce so many new things. The Dune open world survival MMO game Dune Awakening will release in early 2025 on PC, Xbox Series X, and PS5. Dates to be announced. And they just released some new gameplay for it. It looks okay. The Dune hype kind of died down. Still an amazing movie. I haven't gone back and rewatched it, but I've already heard that it's amazing. You know what? Dune, maybe I'll check it out. We'll see. Black Myth, I mean, they're just releasing all this video game stuff. Black Myth Wukong is already breaking multiple records and gaining critical acclaim. 81 out of 100 rating on Metacritic. 2.2 million plus concurrent players. 96% approval rating on Steam. Second most played game ever on Steam already. And the most played single game player game of all time on Steam. Wow. I don't know what it is, but it's a monkey. And I think you fight people. I have no idea, but it looks interesting. I mean, it's breaking all these records, so good for them. Good for them. I always love when movies are going out, being groundbreaking. That's what we love to hear. We love new things. Top 10 new things in pop culture. Number 4, Tom Phillips, director of the new Joker film, Joker 2, says Lady Gaga's Harley Quinn is not similar to past interpretations. The high voice, the accent, the gum chewing, and all that sort of sassy stuff that's in the comics. We're stripping that away. Interesting. So they're going to have a grounded Harley Quinn? What? I don't really know what's going on there. Number 5, Shang-Chi would have been one of the leads in Avengers, the Kang Dynasty. So is he just not one of the leads anymore? You know, that's according to Entertainment, ET. Come on, I love Shang-Chi. Shang-Chi, one of my favorite Marvel movies. And man, him as a lead, I would have absolutely loved that. If they're ever pushing for like, oh, here's an Asian lead. Hey, I'm getting behind that. Okay, I love me some Shang-Chi. Number 6, a lot more stuff they're talking about with Joker 2. Not really interested in that. Joker 2, actually, we'll say this. We'll begin with a Looney Tunes-inspired cartoon starring the Joker. Weird. This movie is sounding very, very odd. Wow, interesting. I have no idea what to make of this Joker movie. I feel like it's just going to be a clutter, you know what, and I don't know. It's not for me personally, but there are people out there. There are people out there that love their Joker films. Number 7, creepy CGI marketing for The Crow at the Statue of Liberty. Oh, very cool. Yeah, this new CGI marketing tool where they film national monuments and CGI stuff over it, it's very trippy because it looks so real. And you have to realize that it's just fake. It's computer-generated images. And that's what's getting really, really kind of interesting about the world, is at times we don't know what is real and what is fake, which I don't like. Number 8, a Pacific Rim prequel series is in the works. Finally, the original Pacific Rim film, amazing. Pacific Rim 2, kind of goofy, not as good, but the Pacific Rim film, amazing. The best use of CGI I've seen in a long time. In a prequel series, talking about maybe when the monsters are first appearing, the kaiju. Yes, count me in. And I don't exactly know who's going to be releasing this. I don't know if Warner Brothers or Paramount, who is the director of the Pacific Rim movies, but I absolutely love them. So happy for that. Number 9, George R. R. Martin, of course, the creator of Game of Thrones, when asked if there's one thing he'd change about the books, he said, if I could change one thing, I'd have them finished. Well, it's funny, George, because you can finish them, you just refuse to. I don't understand. Like, I guess that he wants to satisfy his fan base. But it's gotten to a point where I don't know if we're ever getting the movie, the final book again. We've been waiting for the 6th book. That 7th book is just a dream at the moment. So it's very, very crazy. I have no idea what's going to happen there. But number 10, The Last of Us Season 2 is wrapped filming, releasing next year on HBO. I don't know if I'm going to watch the second season of Last of Us because if it's like the video game, then Joel dies. And I don't want to see Joel die. He's my favorite thing about the Last of Us universe, and the last thing I want to see is Joel dying and us only having Ellie to deal with. That's the last thing I want, is just having Ellie, because no offense, you know, her actress is okay, but I think Joel is really, it's a two-man lead when it comes to the series, so that's just my opinion on it. So those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. I mean, we're always just going over new things here and there. Stay tuned for the next episode for top 10 even more new things in pop culture. Video games, movies, TV shows, all this stuff. But now we finally get into the bulk, the finale of today's episode, which I'm just absolutely overjoyed to discuss with you all. And that is UFC 305. Went down this past weekend. A lot of fun, a lot of interesting things. Let's talk about it. First off, 7-5 on predictions. Not too bad. We went 3-2 on the main card, which means we went 4-3 on the prelims. So overall, not too shabby. And we predicted the main event correctly, which at the end of the day, when I predict the main event correctly, that's when I'm most happy. Let's kick it off. Starting off the evening, the undefeated Stuart Nicole took on Jesus Aguilar. And for some reason, Jesus Aguilar balls out when he's in Australia. And Jesus Aguilar getting his seventh career submission, his eighth career finish, as he beats Stuart Nicole in round one with a guillotine choke. Impressive stuff. Jesus Aguilar is now 3-1 in the UFC on a three-fight winning streak. Two of those finishes. Amazing stuff, both of those in round one. Stuart Nicole, tough loss to start out your career. And Jesus Aguilar was a plus 185 underdog. We should have seen this coming. Stuart, tough way to start your career. But hey, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? He gets taken. Stuart Nicole goes to take on Jesus. Jesus locks in a guillotine choke. And that was that. All right. And it was tight. I think Stuart might even gotten to sleep. It was nasty. Jesus Aguilar starting us out. Eight significant strikes to three in the 2 minutes and 39 seconds this fight lasted. Hey, I'm here for it. I was absolutely loving it. Even though I didn't predict it, it's still fun to see those guillotine chokes. Next fight on the prelims. Welterweight matchup. Song Ki-Nong. Ricky Glenn moving up in weight. Up in weight here to welterweight. And Song Ki-Nong, I thought was going to finish him at multiple points, but ends up getting the unanimous decision win. Good stuff. Good stuff for Song Ki-Nong, the assassin. Improving to 21-8. Totals for the fight, 87 significant strikes to 40 in favor of Song Ki-Nong. 113 total strikes to 67 for Song Ki-Nong. Song goes 1 of 5 on takedowns. Ricky Glenn goes 2 of 15. 2 of 15. Wow. Wow, the takedown defense was on point for Song Ki-Nong. Outstruck him every single round. The only round Ricky might have won was round 1, honestly. And even that, he got outstruck significantly, 22-9. Great win for Song Ki-Nong, bouncing back from his loss to Kevin Drusett in December. Happy to see it. As for Ricky Glenn, three-fight losing streak. It's been 3 years now since he last won, one in June of 2021. Yeah, Ricky Glenn might be towards the end of your career. You know, he's 35. But Song Ki-Nong, little revival here at welterweight. I don't necessarily know what's next for him. Maybe Li Jingliang? You know, we're going to get to Li Jinglong in a minute. But apparently the UFC is going to China later in the year. How about you run up that fight? A little China versus China action in China? Sign me up. Next up, after that, Tom Nolan, Alex Reyes. And Tom Nolan, biggest favorite on this card at a -1,100. Very impressive. Started the fight off a bit rocky. I can't lie, you know. Him and Alex Reyes dueling it out in round one. Alex took him down twice. But once he found his footing, Tom outstruck him in round two and round three. Ends on unanimous decision victory. Impressive stuff. 84 significant strikes to 69. 104 total strikes to 89 for Tom Nolan. And defended 3 of 5 takedowns. Was taken down twice for 4 minutes of control time. You know, good win for Tom. Way to keep it rolling. 8-1 now. Sitting at 2-1 in the UFC. A little two-fight winning streak as well. After getting humbled by Nicholas Botta earlier in the year, has bounced back tremendously. As for Alex Reyes, look, 0-3 in the UFC. 0-3 in the last, gosh, now 7 years. He's not coming back. It's sad to say, but clearly, you know, some people just aren't built for the UFC stage. And clearly, I hate to say it, Alex Reyes is not. But Tom Nolan, proven he belongs in the lightweight division. They only get tougher from here, so Tom Nolan better, you know, lock in, if you will. But there's tons of unranked lightweights for him to take on. I expect nothing but the best. After that, absolutely electric fight here as Jack Jenkins took it to Herbert Burns. I mean, I would have expected nothing less than the fact he actually beat him with leg kicks, and that was the weakness of Herbert Burns, and it was like, oh, this is the obvious outcome, and we get the obvious outcome as the -550 favorite Jack Jenkins gets his 6th career TKO, 9th career finish. Impressive stuff. Impressive stuff here for Jack Jenkins, improving now to 3-1 in the UFC, 13-3 overall. Herbert Burns, not the prettiest, 0-4, been TKO'd in every single one of those fights. Yeah, he's getting cut. He's getting cut, sucks to see, but you're just not built for it, my man. You're just not built for it. Tolls from the fight, 2 knockdowns in the fight for Jack Jenkins, 1 in round 2, and the killer 1 in round 3. 73 significant strikes to 24, 98 total strikes to 45. Herbert Burns goes 2 of 9 on takedowns. Round 3 came around, not even a minute, and he just couldn't even stand up after getting dropped. Okay, Jack Jenkins was in his bag, and he is one of my favorite unranked featherweights out there on the planet. He's so entertaining. He is so entertaining. I just absolutely adore him. Jack Jenkins, Australian man, coming at you from Victoria, Australia. Hometown victory. As for the younger brother of Gilbert Burns, Herbert, best of luck on the independent scene. I'm very... I'm very doubtful you get another chance in the UFC, but it happens. It happens. Jack Jenkins, just too far superior. After that, we had dual women's flyweight matchup, and damn, Casey O'Neill back in the win column, gets the unanimous decision victory over Luiana Santos, and dominated her, honestly. Really did dominate her, even got a little 10-8 round in there. I don't know which judge gave her 10-8, but she got one. 83 significant strikes to 41, 113 total strikes to 46. Luiana goes 1-5 on takedowns. Both women, exactly 2 minutes and 21 seconds control time. That's odd. That's kind of odd, if you ask me. Okay, Casey O'Neill just outstruck her. Every single round outstruck her. Got taken down once in round two for maybe not even a minute. Not even a minute. Good win for her. Casey O'Neill, Casey King O'Neill back in the win column. Was on a little two-fight losing streak. After starting her career on 9-0, was humbled by Jennifer Maya, was shockingly armbarred by Ariane De Silva, but took 8 months off, has rebounded beautifully. As for Luiana, sucks to see. You know, Luiana was on a nice little five-fight win streak, was perfect in the UFC, 3-0, now lost here. It's tough, needs to work on her striking a bit, but she was a bit younger. You know, she was 24, Casey O'Neill was 26, and at plus 125, get a little underdog action right here. In the women's flyweight division, you know, Casey O'Neill, I don't know who I would really pair her up with if I want to throw her back into the rankings. She's at 15, but I don't know. Everyone above her, I feel, is going to win her. So I think she should defend her spot at 15 against another unranked woman's flyweight and just kind of come back. Come back next time. Come back more prepared and leave an even more lasting impression on the crowd. That's what I think she should do. After that, second to last prelim of the night, featherweight matchup goes to a split decision as Ricardo Ramos beats Josh Koulibaly. And there's a little controversy here as to who should have won. Round one kicks off. Everyone can kind of agree that Ricardo Ramos won this. Now, he did get outstruck 10-2 significantly, 23 total strikes. But 2 minutes and 41 seconds of control time, Josh Koulibaly was just kind of being held. In the clinch, held at range, Ricardo takes round one. Round two, domination from Josh Koulibaly. A knockdown, 34 significant strikes to 10, 36 total strikes to 12. Did an excellent job. Now round three comes around. Josh outstrikes him, 26 to 15. Ricardo gets a takedown, though, for a minute and a half of control time. We go to the judges' scorecards. McMeany, he sees it for Ricardo Ramos. Ben Cartridge sees it for Josh Cuiabo, and Mark Christie sees it 29-28 for Ricardo Ramos. And Ricardo coming away with the win, much needed, his first win since June of 2022, 17-6 now, huge win. As for Josh Cuiabo, three-fight losing streak now, and it's now been two split decisions in a row where it could have gone either man's way. And honestly, when we look at the totals from this fight, a knockdown for Josh Koulibaly, 70 significant strikes to 27, was only taken down once, did survive two really good submission attempts, so I will give him that. But it was kind of shocking to not see him get the decision win here. I did pick Ricardo Ramos on our little prediction show, so it's always nice to be correct there. But, you know, in terms of the judges getting this one correctly, they might have dropped the ball, unfortunately. Which leads us to our final prelim of the evening, which was the younger brother of Johnny Walker, Walter Walker, taking on Junior Toffa in the men's heavyweight division. And I swear every UFC event just has that one weird thing that happens on it. This was that one weird thing. In this fight, you know, Junior Toffa obviously looked better on the feet, but he had no answer for Walter Walker's grappling. All right, Walter Walker, 2 of 3 on takedowns, 4 minutes of control time. He controlled 4 minutes of this almost 5-minute fight. With 10 seconds remaining, Walter Walker locked in a heel hook. All right, he locked in a heel hook, and Junior Toffa screamed in pain, all right, and the ref stopped the fight. Okay, and then it drew into question, like, all right, was that a verbal tap, or what even was it? But whatever it was, Walter Walker technically gets the win. And then after the fight, Junior Toffa walks over and slaps him in the face. Zero class from Junior Toffa. And might I add that Junior Toffa is now sitting at 1-3 in the UFC, 5-3 overall. Pretty embarrassing, if you ask me. Walter Walker finally picking up a win. Debuted in April, was unable to win, but now getting back at it. Okay, 12-1 now. Good win in the heavyweight division. We'll always take heavyweights. All right, we will always take heavyweights. But I mean, good job. Good job to Walter Walker. He gets his second career submission, a career finish. Good job to him. And nothing on Walter. I mean, this was the ref. You know, Junior screamed in pain. You could see him grimacing. And the ref was like, all right, we're going to stop this. I don't need you breaking a ligament just to prove that you're tough. We know you're tough, all right? We know you don't really want to tap. So there's that. So yeah, prelims, pretty decent. We had 3 finishes, 4-3 on predictions. As far as the 3 I got incorrect, Jesus Aguilar, you know, clearly a veteran, taking on Stuart Nicol, who is inexperienced. I should have seen that. Luliana Santos versus Casey O'Neill. I'm actually fairly surprised I got that wrong. And we just took the chance that Junior Tafa would get a knockout, and it turns out he is just not UFC caliber. And I don't even know if Walter Walker is. I just know that Junior Tafa isn't. So with that, we get into the main card, and we kicked off the main card with one of the craziest performances that I have seen. Carlos Prates. I knew Carlos would win. I knew Carlos would win. But to extend his winning streak to 10 fights, to get his 18th career finish, 15th career KO for Carlos Prates, as he drops Li Jingliang not once, not twice, but 3 times. I mean, Carlos Prates has hands of steel. Li Jingliang finished for the first time in his career by knockout. Carlos Prates is here, and he is ready to take over in the men's welterweight division. I mean, you could just tell, you know, Li was landing pretty good in round 1, but Carlos just landed 1 big shot, dropped him, and you're kind of like, okay, but round 2 gets around, and you know, he drops Li Jingliang. He's putting on the pressure, he puts on the pressure, clips him again with a hook, knocked him out cold. Carlos Prates, you absolute legend. Now 3-0 in the UFC, all of those knockouts. I mean, dude, 20 of his career wins by knockout. I mean, incredible. The last 6 years, he's knocked out all his opponents on this 10-fight winning streak. Carlos Prates, one of my favorite fighters out there. As for Li Jingliang, 2-fight losing streak, 1-3 in his last 4. Yeah, it's not looking too pretty for Li Jingliang. But hey, that Song Kinan call out from earlier in the night, absolutely would love that fight. I think it makes sense for both of them. But as for Carlos Prates, get this guy in the rankings. Get Carlos Prates in the rankings. How about Vicente Luque? All right, Vicente Luque, I think, would be a fire matchup for Carlos Prates. He also said Chaos Williams. Chaos Williams said, hey, we should match up. And Chaos Williams is down for that. So both of those guys are options. I'm excited to see what's next for Carlos Prates. But he gets the first 50K performance bonus of the evening. You love to see it. And the rankings, I think, will sooner or later be in Carlos Prates' future. I'm excited to see it. With that, we got into our next matchup, which was the heavyweight division. And was this fight exciting? No. This was not an exciting fight in the men's heavyweight division between the number 10 ranked Jairzinho Rozenstruik and the now number ranked 13th Tai Tuivasa. I will say, hands down, this was probably one of the worst fights on the whole card. Now, the real distinction lies in the decision. Okay, so Jairzinho Rozenstruik clearly won this entire fight. Okay, Jairzinho Rozenstruik won every single round. Outstruck him 91-37 in significant strikes, right? Outstruck him by 10 in round 1, by 23 in round 2, and by 21 in round 3. All right? Now, it just wasn't close. Jairzinho Rozenstruik won all 3 rounds. Even the verdict scorecard had exactly the same. That's where thousands of MMA fans vote. We get the judges' scorecards. Split decision. You're immediately like, what? All right? Howie Booth, 30-27 in favor of Tai Tuivasa. Like, it just didn't make any sense whatsoever. And literally after this fight, he was supposed to ref the main event and the co-main event, it might have been. Dana White was like, yeah, relieve him of his duties. And he was relieved of his duties for the rest of the evening. I mean, it was so bad. And even, you know, even Charlie Keech, he gave one of those rounds to Tai Tuivasa. Tai didn't win a single round. He was outstruck at every minute. His face was getting pieced up. This was just embarrassing, man. This was just embarrassing. Tai Tuivasa's losing streak now sits at 5 losses in a row, and he's probably getting cut from the UFC. I mean, there really isn't any other option unless he fights some unranked heavyweight beast like Robales Despange. Okay, Tai Tuivasa's time is over. 0-5, he last won in February of 2022. First time he's gone the distance since 2019, you know, but I don't know, just bad. Jairzinho Rozenstruik, 2-fight win streak now, 2-0 in 2024. I won't lie, his finishing power is looking very bleak. He hasn't dropped an opponent in 2 years now. So, I don't know. Jahzain Rozenstruik gets a win. He's back in the win column. You know, he could fight Marcin Tybura. He could fight Marcin Tybura or winner of Derek Lewis and Alexander Romanov. How about that? Beautiful options there. Tied to Ivasa. He's getting the cut. But the favorite, Jahzain Rozenstruik, walks out with the win. We then got to our third fight on the main card, our middle fight of the main card. It was Dan Hooker versus Matheus Gamrot. And son of a gun, Dan Hooker is now back in the top five at men's lightweight. Wow. It's all I have. Matheus Gamrot loses a split decision in this one. 65 significant strikes to 64 in favor of Dan Hooker. 88 total strikes to 82 in favor of Matheus Gamrot. Matheus Gamrot goes 5 of 15 on takedowns for 5 minutes of control time. You know, Matheus, one round one. I think Matheus won round one, 2 takedowns, more total strikes, okay? Round two, Dan Hooker comes out, even though he was taken down twice, still looked great on the feet. Round three, Hooker finished the fight very strong despite getting taken down. I won't lie. I love Dan Hooker. This was a close fight. I thought Matheus Gamrot won. I thought Matheus Gamrot did enough, but I guess not. I guess Matheus Gamrot did not do enough, and Dan Hooker ends up walking out with a split decision win. He's now ranked number 5. They disrespectfully dropped Matheus Gamrot down to number 8 in the rankings. They still have Michael Chandler at 6 and Benil Dariush at 7. That's just disrespect. Matheus Gamrot, 24-3 now, professionally. Dan Hooker, 24-12. A little 3-5 winning streak for Dan Hooker, but hey, you know what? Good for him. He's ranked number 5. He's probably got a fight with Charles Oliveira, Armin Tsarukian, Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier rematch, I don't know. Not options for Dan Hooker, but he cashes as a +210 underdog, so there's that. Matheus Gamrot, you know, he can take on, I don't know, winner of Renato Moicano and Benoit Saint-Denis. I legit think that's the next fight that they're going to do, but hey, one fight of the night. It was entertaining. Dan Hooker almost knocked Matheus Gamrot out at times. Gamrot almost finished Dan Hooker at times. So it was very entertaining. One of the better fights of the entire card. Probably actually one fight that night. It was the best fight of the entire card. So props to both men. Dan Hooker somehow has made his way back to the top five. Incredible. Just incredible. We then got to our co-main event of the evening, and it was in the men's flyweight division. In the men's flyweight division, we had Kai Kara-France taking on Steve Ersig. And Kai Kara-France knocked Steve Ersig out in 4 minutes, dropped him twice, getting another round one finish, his 12th career knockout. 12th career knockout. Wow. Kai Kara-France, you absolute dog. You absolute dog, Kai Kara-France. Very impressive stuff from him. His 13th round one finish. And yeah, did I see this coming? No. I did not see this coming. People are saying this gave shades of Dominic Reyes versus John Jones, where Dominic Reyes gets a title shot. Should have beat the champ on some people's scorecards. Comes back his next fight, gets knocked out. I'm hoping that doesn't start a downward spiral for Steve Ersig. But certainly in this one, you know, he was just getting outstruck and then he's got clipped. Oh, down he went, gets back up, gets clipped again. He was out, getting hit with some punches. That was that, Kai Kara-France. You know, crazy that he was on a 2-fight losing streak. Hadn't won since March of 2022, and just like that, could be getting a title shot. Okay, he stays ranked at number 4. Steve Ersig now drops down to number 8 from the 7th spot. It happens. It absolutely happens. But Kai Kara-France, I'd give him the title shot. Okay, honestly, I would give him the title shot. Other than a title shot, I mean, there's Amir Albazi, there's Brandon Moreno, there's unlimited options for Kai Kara-France. But in my book, he's worthy of a title shot. Steve Ersig, you know, anyone below him. Manel Cape. Tim Elliott, Tigran Limbeck, Bruno Silva, Asu Almabayev, unlimited options for people who they could fight. I kind of like both of these guys. It sucked to see, but good job, KKF. The main event came around, and I knew DDP could do it. I just knew Driscus Duplessis had it in him to get the win. And lo and behold, we predicted that he would win, and he gets his 10th straight win, his 11th career submission, his 20th career finish, okay? 20th career finish in 22 wins. That's insane. That is absolutely insane. Getting it done, so impressive. Adesanya submitted for the first time in his career. This was competitive, okay? Adesanya, more significant strikes, 97 to 90. More total strikes, 105 to 99. Driscus Duplessis, 4 of 9 on takedowns for 3 minutes, 39 seconds control time. Adesanya actually attempted a takedown, which was pretty funny. But the story of the fight, honestly, Driscus won round one. If you ask me, Driscus won round one. Outstruck him 22-16. He did enough there. Round two, Adesanya, 17-13 in terms of significant strikes, but 3-5 on takedowns, 3.5 minutes of control time. Driscus was up two rounds. Driscus was up two rounds, if you ask me. Heading into round number three, though, Adesanya finally started to feel his groove, outstruck him 40-31 significantly, and was getting it done. Land some good shots in there, too. We get to round four, and DDP just put the pressure on Adesanya, and he had him up against the fence, pounding him. You know, Adesanya shoves him off. Literally, Adesanya does the Max Holloway, points to the mat, like, okay, let's throw down right now. DDP's like, okay, starts throwing chops. Shots, clips him. Adesanya's backing up against the cage, clips him. You know, Adesanya gets ready to defend his face again, gets taken down. DDP immediately takes his back, locks in a rear naked choke. Not even 3 seconds of it being locked in, Adesanya had to tap. And Driscus Duplessis is your undisputed UFC middleweight champion. By the way, he's now the number 6 pound for pound fighter on the planet. Just scenes, if you ask me. Super entertaining. Oh man, I'm a huge DDP guy, and seeing him get it done, I was at the bar with all my boys, and I was going ballistic. I was going absolutely ballistic. He gets it done. Absolutely incredible. Is he now 8-0 in the UFC? I believe he is 8-0 in the UFC. Another finish. Another finish for this man. 20 of his 22 wins by finish. None bigger than this one over Adesanya. They did not give him a performance bonus. You know, they gave Karrueche Rounds one, but they did not give him one. Should have gotten one, but is what is. He gets the belt. He gets the glory. And all those memes just fall back. Anyone who's clowning Duplessis, they can eat it. Okay, round four, rear naked chokehold. Wow. Absolutely incredible. Doing this in Adesanya's home nation of Australia. I guess he's from New Zealand, but kind of the same thing if you ask me. What's next for these guys? I mean, Duplessis, he's got a fight coming up with Sean Strickland apparently. I'm not really a big Sean Strickland guy. You know, I'd prefer to probably see the winner of Nazarene Imavov and Brendan Allen, if you ask me, or the winner of Robert Whitaker and Hamzat Chimaev. That could easily jump Sean Strickland in terms of a title shot. As for Adesanya, a lot of people are suggesting Jiří Procházka, light heavyweight. I really like that. Other than that, it's not really many options. There's not really any options for Adesanya. This was kind of his last attempt, it felt, at the belt. Driscus Duplessis just had his number and is still the man. Still the man. 22-2 record. Undefeated so far in the UFC. He's the guy. He is your guy. Adesanya now, I think, is number 15th in the men's pound for pound. And DDP, the number 6 guy. This is the year of the upsets, if you ask me. And we said Driscus Duplessis would be champion at the start of the year. I've said by the end of the year he'd be champion. That's exactly what we're riding with. So happy for Driscus getting it done. Absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. Great job to Driscus Duplessis. With that, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got for today's episode. We, of course, recapped UFC 305. That was the big one today. There's a lot of action there. And I'm just so busy. You know, I've been so swamped. It's been kind of hard to record. And even though this is kind of one of our shorter episodes, I feel like it's good to have a little shorter episode in here. You know, for the regular listeners, this gives them some time to, you know, not have to spend 2 hours listening to me yabber on about goodness knows what. So I got stuff to get done. There will always be stuff to talk about. We'll be back later this week to give UFC Vegas, was it 96? UFC Vegas 96, I think it is. Predictions, Cal Burrell versus Jared Cannonier. That's going to be an absolute banger. We'll see what other fights are on that card. Probably try and talk some more about fantasy football. Lots of fun things to come over the course of the next year, guys. I mean, we are going to be bringing some absolutely amazing episodes to you guys. And with that, I'll make sure to catch you all next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.